Chapter 14 of Matthew. At that time, Herod the Tetrarch, and this was the son of the Herod who slew all the baby boys in Bethlehem when Jesus was born. He heard of the fame of Jesus, so he heard about all these miraculous things that Christ had been doing. Verse 2. And he said unto his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him." Well, how would he ever conclude that Jesus was John the Baptist, back from the dead? Well, I suppose they both preached the pure word of God. They were similar in how they preached. But I think more than anything, it was Herod's guilty conscience, because he had put John the Baptist to death. He's paranoid. It says in verse 3, "For Herod had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife." So John the Baptist preached against sin, and he didn't care who he called a sinner, including the king. He told the king that he was a sinner because he had taken his brother's wife. And of course, neither Herod nor his so-called wife liked that, and they didn't like John. And verse 4 says, "For John said unto him, It is not lawful for you to have her. You shouldn't be married to this woman. God does not recognize this." And you know, his wife, so-called Herodias, was actually his niece. So you talk about a messed up family. This was a messed up family. And John is proclaiming the truth, that it's all wrong. 5, "And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude, because they counted him as a prophet." Herod would have killed John the Baptist on the spot when he heard him preaching. But he was afraid to do it, because John at that time was popular. 6, "But when Herod's birthday was kept, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod." So Herod is having a big birthday party. And his stepdaughter, I suppose you would say, danced at this party. She was the entertainment. And you can imagine what kind of dance that was. It really moved Herod, I'll tell you that. Because verse 7 says, "Whereupon he promised with an oath to give her whatsoever she would ask." His lust is controlling him. And now, not just his lust for his niece, Herodias, but for her daughter. And so he makes this rash promise, "Whatever you want, I'll give you." 8, "And she, being before instructed of her mother, said, Give me here John the Baptist's head in a charger." Herodias, her mother, really hated John the Baptist. And she wasn't afraid of having him put to death like Herod was. And so she knew her husband. She knew what kind of man Herod was. She knew that if her daughter danced before him, he would lust after her. He'd probably been lusting after her all along, but that pushed him over the edge. So she had it figured out. She said, "Now, daughter, he's going to offer you anything because he's going to be so pleased. And when he makes that offer, you say, you want the head of John the Baptist. You want him to kill John the Baptist." So she does. And then verse 9, "And the king was sorry, nevertheless, for the oath's sake, and them which sat with him at meat, at the meal, he commanded it to be given to her." Now, in order to save face, Herod commits murder. He didn't want to be embarrassed and go back on his word in front of all the people who attended his party. And so he had John the Baptist murdered, a man who he knew was innocent. 10, "And he sent and beheaded John in prison. And his head was brought in a charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother." And what an exciting day that was for this filthy, vile, sinful woman. 12, And you know, to use her daughter to do something like this, to use her daughter to dance seductively in front of the birthday guests? That's how much she hated John the Baptist. What a depraved woman. 12. And his disciples came and took up the body and buried it, and went and told Jesus. So they go and they tell Jesus that John has been murdered. 13. When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. So Jesus went away after John was beheaded, and he wanted to get alone with his apostles. But that didn't last very long, because when the people found out where he was, they came looking for him. 14. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick, even though he wanted to be alone. This was, I think, a tough loss for Jesus, personally, the death of John the Baptist. He was his cousin. And it was a man of God who was the forerunner of Christ. And he's been murdered. And he wants to be alone. But when he saw the crowds coming, and their needs were so great, he had compassion. And so he will help them. He healed them. 15. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, "This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals," or food. They had been there listening to Jesus teach all day, and they lost track of time. And they're a long ways away from home. And now it's late. And they're no doubt getting hungry. And if they don't leave right away, they may not make it home. 16. But Jesus said unto them, to the disciples, "They need not depart. Give ye them to eat." Now, give them some food. You're so concerned about them being hungry. Well, then give them some food. He just asked his disciples, humanly speaking, to do the impossible. 17. And they say unto him, "We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And it wasn't much. The loaves were about the size of pancakes. 5 loaves and 2 fish. And you got an entire multitude here. 18. He said, "Bring them hither to me." So Jesus wanted that food. And he was going to multiply it, as we will see. 19. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass. And that's because God is a God of order. And then he, Jesus, took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake and gave the loaves to his disciples, and his disciples to the multitudes. And notice, they did all eat and were filled, and they took up of the fragments that remained 12 basketfuls. This is an amazing miracle. Because he just fed, according to verse 21, they who had eaten were about 5,000 men, plus women and children. You're talking 15 or 20,000 people were fed with 5 loaves about the size of pancakes and 2 fish, and they had 12 basketfuls left, which means that Jesus multiplied the food faster than the disciples could distribute it. They ended up with more than what they started with. If anybody doubts that this was a miracle, how about that? So Jesus fed them, took care of their physical needs. Verse 22, our physical needs are important to Jesus. So pray that God will meet them. "Give us this day our daily bread," is a part of the prayer that God taught his disciples to pray. 22, and straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side, and that would be back to Capernaum, while he sent the multitudes away. So Jesus demanded that his disciples get into a boat and go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, the city of Capernaum, and while he stayed on that side and dismissed the crowds. 23. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he had to send them away, because evidently they didn't want to leave. You know, once you start spending time with Jesus, you just want to spend more and more time with him. The last part of verse 23, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. So Jesus is alone praying on a mountain. Jesus liked to get alone with his Father. He finally found some solitude here. This is what he was after at the beginning of the day, but look at what he ended up doing that day. But he got alone now with the Father, and he's praying. And then verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. Sudden storm blew up, you know, in the middle of the night. The disciples are in that boat by themselves, and they're losing control of it. And you can bet they wish Jesus was there with them. Well, he's going to be. Look at verse 25. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. The fourth watch of the night was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. Jesus is walking on top of the water with the storm raging and the waves splashing. Here comes Jesus walking on the sea. Verse 26. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled. They were troubled, all right, saying, "It is a spirit." And they cried out for fear. They didn't think that this was Jesus. Why would they? They did think it was a spirit, which in their minds would have been a water phantom. Because there was a superstition among fishermen back in those days that during storms, which is something that they were involved with right here, a water phantom would come out in the middle of the night and seek to destroy ships. Well, you know, they're kind of superstitious. They believe that. There's a storm, it's the middle of the night, and now they see something or someone walking on the waters. Well, what are they going to conclude? It's a water phantom. We're dead. And no, it was Jesus, 27, but straightway, that means immediately, Jesus spoke unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid." Not a phantom. It's me, Jesus. Don't be afraid. And they didn't have to be afraid once they knew that it was Jesus, because he helps people. 28. And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be you, bid me to come unto you into the water." Oh, Peter, he wasn't afraid of anything until he thought about it a while. See, he's not thinking about anything here except this is Jesus. I'm going to go to him. He's walking on water. I want to be like Jesus. I'm going to walk on the water too. Jesus, call me to come to you. Because he knew that if Jesus would call him, then he would be able to do it. Peter wanted to walk on the water to Jesus, but he wanted to make sure that he was in the will of Jesus when he started doing it. Because if you're in the will of God, if God is leading, you will succeed. So he says, "If it's you, tell me to come, and I'll obey you." God always gives us what we need to obey him. So look at verse 29. And he, Jesus, said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Well, this is something Peter never forgot. I wonder what the other disciples are thinking. They're sitting in the boat, scared to death. Nobody else got out on that lake. But Peter did. The guy was bold at times. And other times he was, as we will see a little later on, he was a coward. He was up and down. Right now, he's brave as can be because he's in the presence of Jesus. That always made him brave. Verse 30. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." Peter made a big mistake. He took his eyes off of Jesus and onto the water. And he started to lose faith, he started to become intimidated, and he started to sink. When we are in the midst of trouble, it is so very important that we keep our mind fixed on Jesus. When the pressure's on, and you find that you're in a dangerous situation or a stressful situation, do your best to keep your mind on Jesus. Pray more than ever. Read the Bible more than ever. Study the Bible more than ever. Anything, anything that you have to do to keep your mind on Jesus, do it. Because that will keep you from sinking into despair. But if you find yourself sinking into despair, do what Peter did right here. What did he do? Jesus, save me. Jesus will always answer that prayer. I don't care how long you've been a sinner, how deep you have been into even the most perverse sins that one can imagine. If you cry out, Jesus, save me, he will save you. And he's not going to give you a hard time about it. So look at verse 31. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him. So that prevented Peter from sinking anymore. He saved him. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O you of little faith, wherefore did you doubt? Why did you doubt that you could do what I just commanded you to do? Never doubt. Never doubt that God has given you the ability to do what he has commanded you to do as a Christian. That's a lack of faith. Well, anyway, verse 32. And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Immediately, he calmed the storm. Only God can manipulate the weather. Only God can take a raging storm and turn it into calm. And it happened immediately. You know, it's not a problem for Jesus to rearrange the elements. He created the elements in the first place. He created the atmosphere. He created the entire world, including the atmosphere that produces storms. So he created it all out of nothing. So it's not a hard thing at all for him to rearrange them once in a while. If you don't like the weather, pray to God. Maybe he'll change it for you. Maybe he will. Maybe he won't. But he can, if he chooses to. I tell you that. And so, verse 33, then they who were in the ship came and worshipped him. They worshipped him as God, saying, of a truth, you are the Son of God. They recognized him for who he is after this display of power. He had done a lot of things, but this was the biggie. This pushed them over the edge because they knew that there's no question about it. No one but God can change the weather, especially a raging storm into calmness. 34. And when they were gone over, when they came back to Capernaum, they came into the land of Gennesaret. And that would be on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. 35. And when the men of that place had knowledge of him, so when the men who lived in that area knew that Jesus was there, they sent out into all that country round about and brought unto him all who were diseased. So his reputation had preceded him over there. And now they bring all their sick people. Anybody who needed help, physical help, they brought to Jesus. 36. And besought him that they might only touch the hem of his garment, and as many as touched were made perfectly holy. Now, there was nothing magical about Jesus' coat. Don't you believe any preacher who says, now you send in an offering of $200 or $300 or $1,000 or whatever the case, and I'll send you a cloth that I've prayed over and you'll be healed of your whatever it is you have. That's just a fraud. There was nothing magical about Jesus' garment. It was a touch of faith that healed them.